It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered's IPL Super Over Show. I am your host, Menners. I am joined by my co-host, Paul Dennett. Paul, how are you?
Terrific, Menners. Sydney has turned. It's been so warm until now. Suddenly, the feeling of winter has hit in one day, and I just walked out onto my balcony, and it just hit me. That's the feeling of watching cricket from overseas throughout the night. And what a few months we've got ahead of ourselves. The IPL's coming to a climax, then the World Test Championship final, then the Ashes, and then the World Cup. It's going to be absolutely fantastic the rest of this year.
Yeah, it's just around the corner too, the Ashes and the World Test Championship final and the Ashes. So you're right. Thanks everyone for joining us. So this is our IPL Super Over Show, where we tackle six of the biggest topics of the week in the IPL. We're up to IPL Super Over Show number 5. So I'm going to kick things off with ball one. I'm going to open the bowling, and there's 52 matches of the IPL have been played. So there's just 18 more league games, and then we're into the finals. So it is really heating up. And I'm going to start with ball one, and I'm going to hit the power ranking straight up. So I want to give you the IPL ladder, and then I'll go through the ranking. So sitting pretty on number one, you've got the Gujarat Titans on 16 points after 11 games. Then Chennai are on 13 points after 11 games. Lucknow, 11 points after 11 games. Rajasthan, 10 points after 11 games. And then you've got Royal Challengers Bangalore also on 10 points, Mumbai on 10 points, and Punjab Kings on 10 points. So that's four teams on 10 points. And then you've got three teams on 8 points. You've got Kolkata on 8 points, Sunrisers on 8 points, and the Delhi Capitals on 8 points. So, Paul, really tight ladder as we go into these last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's remarkably tight, aside from the top two. And the exciting thing for me is that I've kind of fallen into this feeling of, I really hope that Delhi can get something out of the season. Maybe it's going to be too hard for them to make the semi-finals, although I think they're still sort of definitely a mathematical chance that their net run rate being negative 5.3 is not going to help them. But it kind of, I feel for Ricky Ponting and I feel for David Warner, and I want them to do well. So it's been the best section of the IPL for them. And the performance of them, and also Sunrisers Hyderabad in winning last night, has meant that, as you say, the table's absolutely crowded.
Yeah, if those two teams had had pretty shocking weeks, then they would have sort of dropped out of contention, and you'd sort of have the eight teams vying for the final four. But as it stands, everyone's got a mathematical chance, as you say, and that's one thing that I think's been proven in T20 tournaments, is that teams can get on a roll. So, you know, Delhi or Sunrisers or Kolkata could win their last four games and storm into the semi-finals. I mean, it's been done before. All right, so my team of the week. Well, Sunrisers had a good week, but they're not my team of the week. They threw one away against KKR. Markram did an Aaron Finch and hit 41 off 40 and cost his team the win. Chakravarti for KKR bowled a few long hops in the last over but got away with it. So KKR stole that one, but then Sunrisers stole the final game on the weekend on Sunday night when they were dead and buried and needed 41 off 12 and got up. So they had a mixed week. Chennai Super Kings had a good week. They beat Mumbai for the first time at Chepauk at home in almost 5,000 days. That's almost 10 years, over 10 years, sorry. So since the IPL started, so quite incredible. I also like Chennai Super Kings bowler Patharana, and I'm calling him the Piranha because he eats stumps. He's like Malinga. He's got this slingy action, and I think he's going to be a devastating bowler in the IPL to come. So look at Patharana from Sri Lanka, the Piranha.
What did you make of the comments? Was it Dhoni saying that he should play hardly any red ball cricket? You know, traditionalists would be a bit concerned by that, I think.
Well, it's easy to think that his action couldn't stand up to the rigors of Test cricket. It is what we've spoken about in the past, that if an IPL franchise would say, hey, here's a few million bucks to play for us all year, you know, the IPL, and then we'll ship you out to South Africa. And, you know, the Piranha probably can eat stumps anywhere.
Indeed. And what do you reckon, just so, sorry to jump off topic again, no. Mumbai versus Chennai, they talk about it as sort of like El Clasico, you know, Barcelona versus Real Madrid, or in the Premier League, it's the jewel in the crown as Manchester United versus Liverpool. You're a big fan of baseball, Boston Red Sox versus New York Yankees. It's obviously not really at that level yet in some ways, but a lot of Indians would probably point to the ratings and whatever else. It is becoming one of the sort of blue ribbon events in domestic franchise sport.
Yeah, that was a bit of a fizzer, that match.
It was not that one, but just the general concept of it.
Yeah. It didn't grab me, to be honest. If I'm being honest, the El Clasico passed me by this year, to be honest.
I'm not really asking for your opinion on this year. I'm talking about as a general thing.
No one's talking about it. Like no one's talking about El Clasico. Like that. Anyway, I don't think you can compare them. The history's not quite there yet. I don't want to upset our fans in India, but all right. Gujarat, the top of the table, had a very busy week. They played three times and they beat Lucknow and Rajasthan Royals, but they lost to the team of the week. My power ranking team of the week are the Delhi Capitals. They won both their games this week. They beat Gujarat. They made 8 for 130 Delhi, and then Gujarat only made 6 for 125, lost by 5. And that's probably Gujarat's worst performance of the season so far. Kuldeep Yadav took 1 for 15 for Delhi. And then Delhi just smashed RCB on Saturday. So Delhi have won 4 of their last 5. As we spoke about, they're still only on 8 points, but they're the form team. That was their week. So Delhi, my number one team for week 5. Paul, ball 2.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. And we'll get to it a bit later. But that low-scoring game between Gujarat and Delhi is actually borne out by the figures, because they are the two most economical bowling teams in the tournament to date. So if Delhi could get their batting right, their bowling is certainly doing pretty well. All right. Second ball, a little bit of a sad ball, but
a sad ball.
It's a sad ball. Sometimes it has to be done. And that is to say, let's talk about the battlers, the players who are underperforming. To a degree, I'm kind of judging my expectations of them as well. So one or two of the people who I've picked in this sad 11 are probably in there by virtue of their reputation being so high. And if the performance hasn't been quite as good, then that's what they've made it in there as a result. So I've picked in batting order my underperforming team of the IPL to date. I've said you have to have played at least a handful of games So I'm not going to include sort of Ben Stokes or people like that who've been injured, or Joey Root, who's played one game and didn't get a bat. But Kale Rahul, Prithvi Shaw, Deepak Hooda, Mayank Agarwal, Manish Pandey, Rian Parag, Harry Brook, then the all-rounder Jason Holder, Jofra Archer gets in there, Umesh Yadav,
ooh,
and Riley Meredith to finish things up. Ooh, I'll give a little bit of justification and a bit of numbers behind that, but at first blush, what are your thoughts on that?
Looks like a pretty solid 11 in the Big Bash, but the worst 11 in the IPL.
That's the new franchise for the Big Bash next year. It's the Devonport have got a side coming in. So just looking at it though, look, some of the numbers, poor old Rahul, strike rate of 113 in the tournament so far. In the one game that sort of thing was going to be useful, their last game that they lost, and he had to come in near the end with a hip flexor injury, and he got none off three, including a free hit. Now, that's unfair because he couldn't swing the bat properly, but he's now out of the rest of the IPL and out of the World Test Championship final. Oh. Prithvi Shaw, I remember a few years ago, he was the anointed one. I was so excited about him. I remember he got 70-odd in Test debut against the West Indies, and it just seemed like he was going to be the next Tendulkar. But he's been dropped as of late April. He's not even getting on the impact player sub-bench. There's been questions about his fitness, and he's averaging 7.8 at a strike rate of 117. Deepak Hooda averaging 7 at a strike rate of 91. Agarwal, a strike rate of 114. Manish Pandey, a strike rate of 116. Parag, 107. And then getting down to Harry Brook, he's been dropped as well. The great hope for England in the Ashes. Not absolutely deplorable, his figures, because he's got that century. But if you took that away, they'd look pretty sick. But with the century, he's averaging 20 at a strike rate of 122. But he got dropped for Glenn Phillips, which is a very proven to be a very clever decision by Sunrisers Hyderabad, because he played a match-winning innings. Jason Holder has had a shocker this tournament, which gives me no pleasure because he's one of my favourite players. Tim David belted him for 3 sixes to win the game the other day, and it was 3 kind of pretty ordinary balls that he got. So he's been disappointing with both bat and ball. Jofra Archer, probably a bit harsh to be in there. His last outing wasn't so bad. He went along just at the, was it 4 overs, 9 for 24, wasn't too bad. But overall, for a player of his calibre to have taken 2 for 190 at an economy rate of 9.5, expecting a bit more from him. Umesh Yadav's been smashed around. He's taken 1 for 189 at an economy rate of touching 10. And Riley Meredith, probably a little bit harsh to be in there because he has taken 7 wickets, so he's getting the wickets, but he's conceded an economy rate of 10.5. And that's kind of how Meredith is. He's dangerous, but on those short boundaried situations in India, he can go the journey as well. He's picked up a bit of an injury too. So a couple that didn't make it. I didn't pick David Warner. I think he's not quite there yet. But Rohit Sharma's not having the greatest one yet either. He's averaging 18 at a strike rate of 127. So just 184 runs from 10 innings. So for all the highs of the best players in the IPL, there's my current underperforming 11. Hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah, wow. What jumped out at me was the strike rate of the batters there.
Mm.
The ones you said, they're all around the 100, 120, and that's just not going to cut it. It's been such a high-scoring IPL over the weekend even. You know, most of the games, you got to be going at a good clip, otherwise you're just holding your team back. It's almost, if you're not taking advantage of all the balls, get out and get someone else out there.
And it's at this point that I'll remind listeners that and viewers that Jeff Marsh, the greatest one-day player of all time, had a strike rate of 55 for Australia in 50-over cricket. And I know that's not comparing apples with apples, but I just did want to mention that. Any chance I get, Swampy, hope you're listening.
All right. I've got ball 3. And this week, the IPL has been embroiled in controversy. There was a little bit of argy-bargy on the weekend. I missed exactly who was involved. But it started last week, actually, where Lucknow Super Giants were taking on the Royal Challengers Bangalore. And obviously, Virat Kohli, big part of RCB. Gautam Gambhir is a big part of Lucknow, and Kohli and Gambhir have a checkered history. And what I like about this, Paul, is clearly what's happened is Gambhir has just been sniping at Kohli for a long time. Like, well, I'll go through the history and exactly what happened, but a lot of little comments from Gambhir in the media, you know, about Kohli's captaincy, about his lack of form, about his lack of centuries, and it builds off their rivalry. And clearly Kohli snapped on when they played each other last week. So what happened was Kohli was getting into it with the Lucknow players and got into it particularly with the Afghanistani international Naveen Al-Haq. And they were going at each other, Kohli and Naveen, after the game. And then Naveen walked away towards Gambhir. And then Gambhir and Kohli started going at each other. And Gambhir was defending Naveen against Kohli. So this was very visible. There's footage of it. You can find it out on Twitter or social media. And so after the incident, Gambhir and Kohli were fined 100% of their match fee. So, Paul, Kohli gets paid a pretty penny to play.
How does Gambhir get a match fee? Doesn't he's not playing.
Well, don't feel sorry for them because I read that the clubs pay the fines. Well, yeah. RCB pays Kohli's fine. I didn't find out whether LSG, Lucknow will pay Gambhir's, but I'd assume they would. So they were fine. Naveen was fined half his match fee. And afterwards, Kohli went on his Instagram and posted a message attributed to Marcus Aurelius that everything we hear is an opinion, not a fact. Everything we see is perspective, not the truth. And then Naveen wrote on his Instagram, "You get what you deserve. That's how it should be, and that's how it goes." So it got pretty...
Very cryptic. Look, well, generally these things...
I thought Kohli's was cryptic, though. Naveen's wasn't so cryptic.
True, yes. That's true. I like Kohli. I don't like that quote, though, because I think that's the sort of quote that Vladimir Putin would like, because, you know, the whole thing of trying to say that, you can't have any facts, sort of just throw everything up in the air and everything's up for challenge. I know that Kohli wasn't meaning that, but, you know, there are facts. There are things, you know. Water does boil at 100 degrees, those sorts of things. But in general, I don't like Gambhir. I've never really warmed to him. I don't like his political persuasion. So I'm...
Kohli.
I don't like the fact that he was kind of potentially not being so nice to a younger player. But I'm in a battle between Gambhir and Kohli, I'm going to be Kohli every time.
Ooh, like it. Okay, so the Hindi News is reporting in the wake of that fine, Virat Kohli has written to a few BCCI officials protesting his innocence, saying he did not say anything to Naveen or Gambhir during the fight, and that he should not have been punished so he shouldn't have been fined so much. So it continues. And then I looked at the history between Gambhir and Kohli, and wisdom.com have got a good article. And so in 2009, Kohli made his first ODI century and he batted with Gambhir and they put on 224 runs. And at the end of the match, Gambhir gave his player of the match award to Kohli. So, Paul, at this point, 14 years ago, you're thinking these guys are going to be best mates. Then if you go onto YouTube, you can find in 2013, Kohli gets out and then Gambhir sledges him on the way out. And then they run at each other like they're going to have a fight. And another player gets in and pushes them apart. And then from there, as I said, it's just minor, like every time, like the RCB would lose a big game. Gambhir would tweet out something saying, you know, he was happy that RCB had lost and stuff like that. Gambhir said Kohli should have been dropped when he was in his form slump. So that's why it's just been bubbling away. And then it just blew up last week in the IPL. And I don't think this is going to go away, Paul. Like, they clearly hate each other.
Yeah, well, it doesn't look like this. I think that's probably the case. You love it, don't you, Menes?
I do, absolutely.
I know it's been disturbing you that in recent years that players all around the world, there just seems to be this greater level of spirit in all games. And I've seen you becoming a more and more diminished figure as that's happening. So any sort of controversy you're going to cling to.
What are you talking about? I just want to know the source of it. Like, there was some reporting that, you know, as Coley started to emerge as a great player and Gambier faded out, there might have been some jealousy there. But I can't find any source to where that sort of nastiness comes from. But you're right. I like it.
Indeed. All right. Well, let us move to ball four. And what am I going to do for ball four? Here we go. Shouldn't have been too surprised. Match of the week.
We like it.
Well, it's very recent. It was just, what is it about now? Almost a day ago, last night. It was Rajasthan Royals up against Sunrisers Hyderabad. And this is not just match of the week. This would be one of the best and most highly watchable games of the IPL to date. If you haven't watched it, and if Menez's spoiler that he gave early at the start of the show sort of went over your head, and you've got KO, go and watch. Pause this. Go and watch the mini now, because it's really enjoyable and there's a cracking finish. So pause, come back. Enjoy. But for those of you sticking around, Rajasthan batted first, made 2 for 214, and it was just, I don't know what price Sunrisers Hyderabad would have been at that point, but you wouldn't have backed them with stolen money. Butler 95 off 59, absolutely smashed it everywhere. Sanju Samson, their captain, got loads of runs as well. He got 66 not out, and it was just, you know, the Sunrisers Hyderabad at the bottom of the table clearly were going to have no chance whatsoever of winning. Yet,
and that was going to kill kill their IPL.
Yeah, pretty much. Right from the start, they were kind of making a decent fist of it. I don't think they were ever in front, but they had never, Rajasthan couldn't throw the knockout punch. And it was kind of like you'd hear the commentators say, oh, this is still, you know, this isn't over yet. And I was like, it's not over yet, but it's very close to over. Mm. And it just looked like they were going to put up a decent effort, but not get there. And there was a key moment. The captain, Samson, dropped Tripathi, and at that point they needed 55 off 22. Had he taken that catch, I think it would have been all over. Chahal, who bowled fantastically, then did get Tripathi out a little bit later. They needed 44 off 16. All going to be all over. Markham's out. They needed 41 off 12. And then Kuldeep Yadav, this is a left-arm medium bowler, bowls three shocking deliveries to Glenn Phillips, the one I said has been brought in for Harry Brook, who got dropped. Phillips went 6-6-6, two full tosses and a long hop. Next ball, he cracks for four as well. And suddenly it's game on. Next ball, Hetmyer takes a really good catch. Could have been a collision. Phillips is out. They need 19 off seven. Then the final over, there's just chaos. Obed McCoy drops a sitter off the first ball of the last over. Second ball of the last over, there's another dropped catch, although this time it was a much harder one. Joe Root, playing his first game on the fence, almost manages to catch it, but gets parried over for six. And then it all comes down to the last ball, and they need four to tie, five to win. And what happens is, let me just get it. I want to get this exactly right. It's Sandeep bowling, and Abdul Samad is facing. Abdul Samad smacks it down to long off, and the catch is taken by Joss Butler. It's all over. And the camera comes onto Sandeep's face, and the expression of relief on his face, it was almost touching. It was like just this expression of, you know, when something horrific is happening and suddenly in that instant, all the bad things have gone. That just look of, oh, total relief. And then all of a sudden, well done, Menez. I knew you'd have it there. And the players are looking at each other saying, did we just make an irrelevant point in a podcast? What's going on? Oh, no, that means a no ball. That means
yes. A ball. Exactly.
That is what has happened. It's a no ball, and Sandeep Sharma has overstepped, and they ran one as well. So they get now they need four to win.
You know what I loved at this point was the crowd shots, because it's Sunday night, Rajasthan home game. They're all pumped. They're all in their pink. They're all out having a good time. They're all like laughing, like that last ball's bowled. They're all like, yes, we're going to go home. Our home team's won. Like a perfect night. Close game, but the home team wins. Happy days.
Yeah, I mean, it was it took everyone a few seconds to realize it as well. But then, yeah, disaster. So in he comes, final ball gets pumped straight down to the ground for six. And Sunrisers Hyderabad have won from absolutely nowhere. The few stats that came out, I think it was the 51st game ever played at Jaipur. Highest successful chase ever. It's the highest successful chase Sunrisers Hyderabad have ever had in the IPL. The highest successful amount of runs that's ever been chased against the Rajasthan Royals in the IPL, and I believe the third highest chase. So overall in the IPL, the equal third highest chase. So it's an incredible, incredible set of events. And I mean, is Malinga the bowling coach of Rajasthan Royals?
No idea.
I think I thought I was seeing him sitting there on the sideline, but. You know, whoever is the in that situation, it's like we go on and on and on about it on this podcast. But as a bowling coach, there is only one thing that anyone needs to do, and that is to stop the front foot no balls. And they don't do it. I don't understand. It's like, oh, it's too hard, you know. Well, you don't get the rhythm. You feel like if you're not pushing right across the line, you feel like you're bowling uphill and all these sorts of things. There's just no excuse for it anymore. It's got to be stopped. And it was a no ball by about 4 or 5 centimetres as well. A real shocker.
We've had everything this IPL. We've had that. We've had the missed run out at the non-strikers end off the last ball. Do you think that was a better finish than when KKR won that game where I think Rinku Singh hit the 5 sixes? Which one do you think's the better win?
I think that one might have been better than this one. Oh, it's hard to say because those 3 sixes that Phillips hit really did get it from nowhere to a chance. It did oscillate quite a lot towards the end. Yeah, I'm not sure. What do you reckon?
I tend to think the 5 sixes was slightly better because it's just 5 sixes in the last over is just breathtaking, but not much in them. You know, 41 off 12, you don't see that chase very often.
Yeah, Malinga is the fast bowling coach. So what are you doing, mate? Just get them to get their front foot behind the line.
Stop bowling full tosses as well. There's been some awful death bowling. That's the one thing that I would say is similar between that Singh innings and, say, Glenn Phillips innings is they were given some absolute dross to hit. Like, you know, if you're thinking, I want to clear the fence, as I said, a full toss, you know, just is perfect.
I think it just shows how skewed the game is in favour of the batters. And, I mean, it makes for a great spectacle, but I sometimes do think, you know, that game last night, there was one ball that finally the bowler got a good one and it was edged over first slip for six. It was just like, that's not right. That's not how it should be. But you've got such a tiny margin for error when, you know, the balls that are, you know, the boundaries are too small, I think. And I think that is something that needs to change. There needs to come a point where some of these top edges do get caught. So if you're the bowler running in and know you've got about a zone about the size of half a handkerchief to land it on, I could see how you might feel the pressure and miss that.
All right, so that's ball four, Mr. Dennett. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back with ball five.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right. Welcome back to the Super Over Show. I'm Menes. I'm joined by Paul Dennett, and I have ball five. So just two balls to go in our wrap-up, and then there's a few listener questions that we'll get to. So my ball five is Aussie Watch. Of course, being an Australian-based podcast, we have to keep a close eye on how our compatriots are going overseas. And the big news this week, it was the return of the big boy from Bendemeer, Josh Hazlewood. Yes, Hoff is back. He returned for RCB, took 2 for 15 against Lucknow to help them defend 126. So Hoff, good to see him back, 2 for 15. He then played in RCB's loss to Delhi, and he took 1 for 29 off 3. He did get his mate Warner out, so Hoff we'll get bragging rights over Davey Warner. And Mitch Marsh got Glenn Maxwell first ball. So I can imagine those two who were great mates giving it to each other in the dugout. But, Paul, good to see Josh Hazlewood back. Obviously, vitally important to Australia's chances in all their endeavours this year.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to be fascinating to see how he goes because – at his best, he's a walk into the Australian test side and is going to be an absolute key for us in terms of whether we can retain the Ashes. So very heartening to see. Not only is he back, but bowling well and getting wickets.
Cameron Green was elevated to open the batting for Mumbai against Chennai. He failed. He made only 6 off 4, but he opened the bowling as well. So, I don't mind him opening the batting up the top there. Tim David failed against CSK, just made 2 off 4, but he did make 19 not outs in Mumbai's good win over Punjab during the week. Berendorf and Meredith have been dropped. Meredith did feature in Paul's Battlers Team of the Week, but actually didn't play for Mumbai.
Well, no, it's my Battlers Team of the Tournament, not for the week.
For the tournament, yes, that's right. Yeah. So that's pretty much the Aussies. Pretty quiet week for them. Nathan Ellis played for Punjab against Mumbai and took 2 for 34, but really a quiet week. Maxi and Short didn't too much. The real big news, I guess, was Hazlewood's performance, but generally pretty quiet for the Aussies this week.
Yeah, a bit of a disappointing week, really. You're right. That was Hazlewood was the big one. Our two friends getting Mumbai over the line. The work had been done mainly before them, but Green 23 off 18 and Tim David 19 not out of 10 when they chased down a mammoth total, chased down 3 for 214 against Punjab. Well, actually, in that innings, you could probably say that not only did Short not do much, but when a side makes 3 for 214 and loses, you kind of look at the bloke who scored 27 off 26 and say, maybe.
Maybe you could have done a bit better, mate.
Yeah, maybe you could have done a bit better, particularly with Liam Livingston getting 82, not out of 42. So, yeah, not the greatest week for the Aussies. Now, moving on, for my last ball, I was going to do Player of the Week, and I kind of chickened out and have kind of awarded it to the entire Gujarat bowling lineup.
oh mate, come on! What is going on in here?
You need a different siren. That's not a tenuous point. You're just saying it's a stupid point. You need a dun 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 thing.
Anyway, yeah, I do.
So since our last show, as you mentioned at the top of the show, they kept Delhi to 8 for 130, albeit they then did lose that game. They kept Rajasthan to just 118. And then after belting 2 for 227 themselves against Lucknow, they restricted them to 7 for 171, which in the context of that game is pretty good. So some of the performances, Shami in that first game, 4 for 11 off his 4 overs. Rashid Khan was pretty economical. Noor Ahmed was good. Then Shami again, pretty economical in the next game. Rashid Khan, 3 for 14 off his 4 overs. Noor Ahmed again, decent. And even in that final game, Shami, 4 overs, 1 for 37. Sounds pretty unspectacular, but on a pitch that was clearly a belter, that is pretty impressive. Mohit Sharma 4 for 29, Noor Ahmed 1 for 26 in that game. And I just was that then prompted me to look at the overall economy rates for all of the teams. So in reverse order, it's Mumbai 9.5, Punjab 9.46, KKR 9.4, RCB 9.0, Sunrisers Hyderabad and Rajasthan Royals both about 8.75, CSK 8.6, Lucknow 8.3, Delhi 8.3, and Gujarat 7.99. I had to go to the two decimal places there, so I didn't want to have to round it to 8.0. It lost a bit of its luster if it did that. But they are not only the team with the best economy rate in the tournament, they have the best strike rate in the tournament as well. They're taking their wickets a wicket every 16.9 balls. And for context, the team right at the bottom, Punjab Kings, are taking one every 22.9 balls. So the fact that Gujarat are sitting clear on the top of the table in a tournament which has been very batter dominated is to a significant extent down to the fact that their bowlers are performing fantastically and as a result collectively win our Performance of the Week award.
Okay. I mean, okay. It was supposed to be Player of the Week, but anyway.
So right, Mohammed Shami.
No. I like it. But we could have just changed the name before we went on air. Like,
that's true.
Just,
it's not as though
we've had me. It's like we don't talk to each other.
We make them up as we go along that I'm stuck with them.
All right. So thanks, everybody. There's a few questions I want to get to. Before we go, though, I just want to wrap up the week. So as I said, Gujarat are on top. Paul's player of the week, all their bowlers. So they're on 16 points. And then you've got Chennai, Lucknow and Rajasthan. They're the top four. If it was the semifinals or the finals tomorrow, that would be it. I think we'll see some movement, though. Rajasthan have lost their last three games. And then you've got three teams on 10 points just outside the top four. And as I said, 18 more league games to go. So two more super over shows before the finals. Paul, I don't think this top four that we're looking at will be the top four that is in the finals.
Well, usually that's right. That things do change, and especially given that it's so tight, I think that it's hard to see Gujarat not being there, obviously, and Chennai looking good. But from there downwards, take your pick. And even as it's possible that one of those three on 8 points, if they have a barnstorming run, as Delhi kind of are, could actually make it all the way to the finals. It'd be something if Delhi could win it from here, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. All right, so we're going to get to the listener questions, but just if you want to support Cricket Unfiltered to help us continue to bring coverage of the greatest game in the world, the way you can do that is you can you can support the show on Patreon. So if you go into the show notes, there's a link there. We've made some changes there, so you can have a look there. But also, if you can just rate and review the show on whatever app you listen to it, or if you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment or a thumbs up. That would be much appreciated. And finally, maybe if you've got some cricket-obsessed mates, share the show with them. You can make fun of Paul's takes together. Paul, where can the listeners get in touch with you?
I'm on TikTok as paul.dennett, I think, D-E-N-N-E-T-T. My back catalogue is there for everyone. If you haven't seen it yet, there's plenty of stuff from the 1920s and 1930s, some stuff from the 1880s. So, you'd be mad if you didn't look at it. I haven't been posting a lot of late, but I have every intention of getting back on the horse soon.
All right, now to the listener questions. All right, Mr. Chatterjee, where do you rate Clark's batsmanship and leadership? I'm assuming he's talking about Michael Clark, Paul.
Yeah, I think so. I rate his batsmanship very highly. He averaged 49, which, that's on the threshold of greatness. You could debate whether he's quite made to that level or not, but he's back towards the end. Curtailed him a little bit, but there were periods there where he was just an absolutely in a class of his own. His leadership, I think, on the field as a tactician, he's the best Australian captain of my lifetime in terms of his aggression and his ability to make the game move ahead. Off the field, I think most people would say that he wasn't a good leader. He clearly had a lot of people that didn't really love him. So I think off the field, a poor leader, but on the field, a fantastic leader.
I think that's a good assessment. I look at that period from sort of around 2010 to about 2014, when he just had that magic run and he made that triple century at the SCG. And that was some of the best batting I've ever seen at Test cricket. The fluency in the stroke play was just something to behold. At his best, he was such an elegant batsman, the way he played through the offside. He was quite wristy and he seemed to do it so easy. And then he just turned the ball on the onside with it drift into his pads. So terrific batter. And I guess the only things I ever heard about his leadership was that Clark was just very selfish behind the scenes. And I guess that would curtail you from being a great leader, because they often say the great leaders are a little bit selfless. But certainly, I think you've got it right. Tactically excellent. Did he help erode the culture of the Australian cricket team? I don't think I'm qualified to give an answer, but I don't know. I think there's a few people that might say that. All right. Now, Gershan has left some great comments. You can go and read them. They're not questions, Gershan, so I'm not going to read them out. Mr. Sharada. Miss Sharada, hi Paul and Andrew. When will the BBL be open to private ownership?
Good question. It's been talked about. Initially, they considered it and then they strongly went against it, fearing that the BBL was brought about to kind of not necessarily make money, but to make cricket popular with a new audience in Australia, especially getting youngsters involved. It's a very hard sport to sell to youngsters in a country where, although it's a very big sport, it's not like India where it's just totally the dominant sport. And that with T20 for the first time ever, the barriers to entry to a new fan have kind of been blown away. You can turn up for your first time and really enjoy it. Whereas, you know, your first ever test match, you might see a day of two for 150 and think, what's all this about? So they didn't want to give it to private ownership because they wanted to be able to control it. There's talk of saying, let's all get the dollars that private ownership will bring, but the fear is, what will that then lead to? Because the BBL's on at the same time as the test matches, and you could suddenly have a situation where a player could be playing for a BBL franchise who's an Australian representative, and the BBL franchise could say, well, I've got plenty of money, I'm going to make it worth your while to stay with us. Don't play for Australia in the test side. That's fanciful at the moment, but I think they fear that that sort of thing could happen 10, 15, 20 years down the line. So I don't know whether it's ever going to come in or not, but they're certainly still considering it. What do you reckon, Menace?
Yeah, I had an interesting chat with the head of Cricket New South Wales, Lee Jamon, heading into last summer, and he raised the possibility that you wouldn't necessarily have to sell the franchises. You could actually take an investment into the league itself. And he gave examples, I can't remember which they were, of other leagues where you could potentially sell a portion of the league. So the incentive is to make it a highly profitable league. And with that will come in some extra investment. So there's a few ways they could do it. But yeah. All right. Martin Lawrence, did you see the comments from the Rajasthan owner about the future of Test cricket? I didn't, Martin.
I have Googled them since we've been on air, and he's
multitasking. Impressive.
He's making the point that he feels that the future of Test cricket will be reduced to short windows like Wimbledon in tennis to make it more productive. My feeling about that is, that's not the worst thing in the world.
No.
The worst thing in the world would be is if in 15 years' time, Test cricket is played between Australia and England and India, and either no one else or the other countries who play it, as it's two tests as quickly as they can, no one turns up and no one cares about it. So in an ideal world, I'd love to go back to the old days where you have the touring side out here and you get to know the players and you have a test match every month and state games in between, and it's just never going to happen. That's a long, long...
Houses for 25 grand.
Exactly. That's a long, long time ago. So... And the Ashes is kind of now at the point where it almost is like that, where, like, you know, it's going to be 6 weeks where it will be big news, but then it's done and dusted and in and out. And again, I would love it to be the old times, but it's not. So I'm happy for the window for Test cricket if that is a way that Test cricket gets shown the love it deserves.
You know, when there's those international football breaks and it actually means something, whether it's a qualifier for a World Cup or a European Championship or something, and you get this kind of excitement around the world of, you know, big international football matches being played in different places. Well, maybe you could see that happening in Test cricket, where there's a window for 3 or 4 weeks and there's everyone's playing Test series. So you might get, you know, Ireland taking on somebody, Bangladesh, like we saw recently, and Australia playing someone. And so you've got this nice feeling around the world of Test cricket being embraced by all the countries because there's a sort of designated window.
I could live with that as long as that it was then take it to that next level as well, saying, okay, we know that in this particular window, these matches are going to be on. So months out, let's sell tickets. Let's talk it up, pump it up. The pitches need to be the right level. You know, nice, bouncy, attractive, fast pitches, spinning pitches, something, just not flat, terrible pitches that reduce the standard of the cricket. And then, yeah, and then we have the climax of the World Test Championship final and all that sort of stuff. I could be on board with that. Yeah.
Now, next question, Namon Garg. Australia, please focus on your Ashes, please, and let the Indians win the World Test Championship final. Well, I don't know if Pat Cummins would agree with that. Like, if I were to just take him aside and say, hey, Pat, look, can you just let the Indians have this one? You have the Ashes. But, yeah, I want both. I'm going to be greedy. I want both now. Like, and as we get close to the Ashes, I remember how much the English wind me up and how much they annoy me. So now, although my brain says it'll be close, I just hope it's 4-0 and Bazball just blows up in their face and on all these other cricket podcasts, they're just crying into their cup of tea and we've got the World Test Championship and the Ashes.
I remember a few years ago, and I think it was the Australia-India series, that back in the earlier days of the IPL, where Ravi Shastri at the end of it said, this has set everything up perfectly for the IPL as though it was the entree and the IPL was the main affair. And at that stage, that was, I think he was being deliberately inflammatory, and he said it with a twinkle in his eye. But it is fantastic that I bemoaned the lack of Australia playing county games in the lead-up to Ashes Test. Well, what about this for a warm-up? We've got the best warm-up for the Ashes ever. We're playing India in a test match ahead of the main fair of the Ashes. So fantastic.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for the questions. Lovely to have so many people watching live. Paul, excellent coverage of the IPL this week. You, me, and Jaleesa have to catch up soon. We've got some big news for the show that we'll be announcing soon. And we'll have a bit of cricket news happening. So outside the IPL, surprisingly. So I'd love to catch up soon and hit that one.
Sounds good.
Thanks everybody for listening and watching. We'll be back next week.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.